46 degrees now. KQEN News Time is 12:35.
This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Going in-depth on COVID-19 once again, County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer, thanks for being on this afternoon.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, obviously, a busy time, a lot of things to talk about. Let's take a look at the vaccine situation. First of all, a lot of things coming out in recent days on that, and it appears in Oregon and in lots of other places as well. Supply versus demand is kind of a big issue right now.
Well, supply and demand are the two big issues. Right now, we have lots of people who want a vaccine, and only a very few vaccines. So truly is more demand than supply.
And late last week, of course, a shift. The Oregon Health Authority had one plan, found out that the Federal Reserve had been drained, it appeared. And so now kind of a reshuffling over the last few days. So kind of a two-week backup for a lot of the senior population. And in Douglas County, what are you working on, kind of looking forward towards vaccine distributions ahead?
It was a bit confused by the federal announcement. So earlier in January, the Secretary of HHS, Alex Azar, said that they were going to release the reserves that they'd had, and then later we found out that they really didn't have any. So we were expecting to get lots of vaccine in January, and we'll get a little bit more than we were getting before, but only a little bit more. We're going to do this in three phases. The first phase is going to be the 1A group. So that's a group of healthcare workers, EMS, and people living in nursing homes and skilled nursing facilities. We're a good way through that. And then starting at around the 25th, we'll be moving on to the next group, which will be teachers. And then starting on February 8th, we'll be working on seniors, working again from the oldest to the youngest of seniors.
Now, the issue of teachers and child care workers starting next week, then those over age 80, I see a lot of back and forth comments out there. Kind of explain the criteria or the reasoning in terms of how the teachers were put ahead of the older folks.
So this is a balance. We certainly know that older folks have had the worst outcomes when they get this disease. We also know that we really want schools to open. And since kids can't get vaccinated because there's no vaccine for kids, we're asking teachers to go into an environment, which is a moderate risk environment, without vaccine. And so we had to balance the safety of teachers and being able to open schools against the needs of seniors. And it is a very difficult balance. I'm glad I'm not governor and having to make that. And so some states and some places in the world have prioritized seniors. Other places have prioritized teachers. And this is a really tough decision. What I'm hoping, though, is that we don't have a food fight between teachers and seniors about this vaccine.
And the rollout date of vaccines for teachers and child care workers coincides with at least what has been the plan for a number of districts to go back to in-person or limited in-person learning. And so I would imagine there's a potential that could get pushed back if not enough teachers have been vaccinated by us by that point.
Well, again, we don't think that every teacher needs to be vaccinated before they start in school, but we are asking teachers to go to moderate risk environments where they can work from home. And so I think that was the reason to put teachers higher, although this will be very controversial.
So let's talk about the local cases. How many have we seen in the past week?
So over the last week, we saw a rise in the week before last. Last week moderated a little bit. We've had 10 for each of the last 2 days. So that's a much more moderate number. The big increase that we saw at the beginning of last week was related to a couple of large outbreaks. And those outbreaks seem to be quieting.
And today, the new number's out, 11 positive cases. Are we seeing COVID-19 come from kind of the same places it has been in terms of the reasoning, or rather where people are when they're being exposed?
So there's not much new on that. So since last March, we've been saying travel is a risk. And again, several of our cases have had travel to other areas where there's much more disease. They come back to Douglas County and spread it. We've seen gatherings over the last 2 weeks. It's been church gatherings, but other kinds of gatherings that spread the disease. And then we have seen spread in families. So those have been the three big areas that we've seen from the very beginning.
Are you hopeful that with the last few days being 10 and now 11 today, that we'll be able to stay under the framework number to avoid going back to extreme risk status here in another week or so?
Well, the risk status is determined every other Monday. So next Monday will be a time. Right now we're a little over. The last time we were reviewed, we were a little under. So it's really going to depend upon what happens this week.
And I have noticed over the past few days, looking at the numbers when they come out every day, that there are areas when I think about it, and sometimes I've had to look it up and double check, that are smaller than Douglas County, like Klamath County, for instance, with much higher number. I think we had 10 yesterday. Klamath County, either Saturday or Sunday, had 56 cases for a small rural area.
Yeah, so what we do see is that certain small counties really have a lot of disease. So Klamath this week, for the last several weeks, Malheur and Umatilla have really had a lot of cases. We think the cases in both Malheur and Umatilla County associated with the prisons they have there and with some large food processing plants.
What about in Klamath County? Any particular explanation there?
I have not seen yet the explanation for Klamath County, but it doesn't take very much, right? So our one faith-based organization had 60 cases from one church. So it doesn't take a lot to cause a big outbreak, especially in a small area.
Talk about the other places in the state where it's a real kind of a hotspot situation right now.
Well, the hotspot situations are mostly, again, in the Portland and Marion County areas. They just have not had this well under control for a while. When you have it well under control, you're able to do all of your case investigations and contact tracing quickly. You're able to have enough services to provide people support so they can remain in quarantine. And so, thank goodness, Douglas County has been in that area, except for maybe a week or so in the end of November. But we've been done a great job. If we had as many cases as Klamath per capita or as Lane County per capita, we'd never be able to stay above water.
Talk about how many people are involved behind the scenes with the Douglas Public Health Network and with this response to COVID-19.
So in addition to all the help we get from all of our partners, Douglas Public Health Network now is about 30 people. We're doing our daily case investigations and our contact tracing. This group is also supporting the vaccine efforts. They're doing the testing efforts at the fairgrounds, and they're providing all the information that we're using. So it's an incredible group of people I get to work with, and it's been a phenomenal honor to work with such great people.
And a lot of these folks kind of came from varied backgrounds, right?
Right. So many of our case investigators and contact tracers were not in healthcare before this, but we were really looking for people who connected well with the community. We were looking for people who were bilingual. We were looking for people who talk well on the phone so that they can explain to people what they need to do for isolation and quarantine. That doesn't really take a big medical background to do, and really we were looking for people who could connect.
And talk about isolation and quarantine. We've defined this before, but as things evolve, not everybody remembers. Talk about the differences between the two terms.
So isolation means that you have the disease and need to stay away from others to keep people from spreading it. Quarantine means you've been exposed to the disease, don't have it yet, and are asked to stay away so that if you do get sick, you don't expose others. We typically have between 100 and 200 in isolation, and then another 200 to 500 in quarantine at any one time.
And that's a lot of people to keep track of.
Oh, that's a lot of people to keep track of. And we've had some good help from the ESD when there's school cases. And we've had a lot of good help from other people in the community helping us with that many people. In addition, there are some people who need housing because they can't stay where they're at while they're infected, or because they don't have another place to spend their isolation. So we're also supporting those people.
All right, going to take a break on Inside Douglas County. More when we come back. County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer, the interview, a podcast after 1, 1246 on Inside Douglas County from News Radio 1240 KQEN. Douglas County, 1248. Lars Larson coming up at 1. County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer. We're looking at the COVID-19 situation. Let's talk about other parts of the nation. Yesterday, I was listening to one of our weekend programs, and they had some information about California, where they said last week, at least in one area of the state, if not the whole state, maybe it was just Los Angeles, that one person died of COVID-19 every 8 minutes. That's pretty ominous.
Yeah, Southern California, Arizona, Oklahoma, South Carolina, and Rhode Island are really battling with this disease. And the number of deaths is just extraordinary. And so Southern California and Arizona especially are dealing with lots and lots of cases and lots of deaths. It really is heartbreaking.
Is it just a situation where it got so big that it's been harder to rein in? Or what's been the issue there?
So some of the issue is that they've got a lot of people living closely together, so it's relatively hard to stop the spread of the disease. And they've really fallen behind on their abilities to do contact tracing and quarantine, and so they're just having a lot of cases. As well as what's happening is that cases that have built up over the last 4 or 5 weeks, many of those are still hospitalized, and that's really straining their hospital system.
Yeah, and one of the other things I heard in our program over the weekend was that strain, that stress on healthcare workers, many of whom have been working extra shifts and working many hours a week, clear since March. And I heard one doctor talk about losing 3 patients who passed away of COVID in one shift and just, you know, losing it. I mean, the emotional toll for the healthcare workers and what they're going through, plus trying to stay safe at the same time, has got to be intense.
Yeah, it really is intense. I will tell you that, you know, as caregivers, when we lose a patient, it's really, really hard. And to lose so many patients so quickly has just been devastating. You know, in Oregon, most people die at home, so we do not have that many hospital deaths. But with COVID, many of these people have died in hospital under really hard circumstances. And one of the hardest circumstances is that typically not allowed to visit during the time that people have COVID because of the risk of exposure. And so many of these people are dying without their family around. That's really hard.
And each area's protocols are slightly different. Sometimes at least one person, maybe a spouse, can be there near the very end. But yeah, for other family members, I understand that it's a pretty tough situation to go through this. I know that you've talked to, your background was from New York originally. You've talked to a lot of people who have been in areas a lot more intense than what we're dealing with here.
Exactly. So New York has got a relatively low number of cases now, but in the springtime when there were so many cases, people might know 6 or 8 or 10 people with the disease, might know of another 6, 8, or 10 people who died. So really, truly a tragic event for those places that have that overwhelming amount of disease. In Douglas County, we've had 43 deaths, which is 43 deaths too many, but it's still one of the lowest death rates among big counties in the country.
What about other nations in the world? How are things looking this week?
So it's a tale of two stories, and the Asia area is doing relatively well. You know, China had, if you look at the countries of Australia, New Zealand, Japan, South Korea, Taiwan, you know, they have less than 100 cases combined. And so they're doing very well. But other places in Europe, the UK, Portugal, Sweden, are really struggling with a lot of cases, almost as many per capita as the U.S.
And I would imagine in some of these other places, these other nations, the issue of how you roll out the vaccine and all of that may be more complex, may have more bumps in the road than even here in the U.S.
Well, I will tell you that almost every country has a different plan for testing and for vaccines. And in the U.S., every state has a different plan. So we have lots and lots of different plans, and there's a lot of confusion out there. And that really is problematic. Unlike other diseases, like the measles eradication plan, basically every state and every country has the same plan. In this, there are so many plans out there that it gets very, very confusing.
Let's kind of delve into the science here for a minute. Over the weekend, I think maybe on Friday, it was announced that the COVID-19 variant had made it to Oregon, someone in Multnomah County, that later turned out to be a staff member at the University of Portland, who has not been traveling, and a lot of investigation there. But maybe explain more about variant, because a lot of people who don't know medical terminology and science are not exactly sure what that means.
So all living organisms mutate, and they mutate slowly. And this virus mutates about average for viruses, maybe a little slower than most. As it reproduces itself, it makes a copy of its genome. This virus actually has a spell checker, so it checks to be sure that the new is similar to the old, but it still does occasionally have a mistake. So I think I came up with a pretty good analogy this weekend. Let's say you were copying a recipe for someone, and the recipe called typically for 1 teaspoon of vanilla, and when you copied it, you made a mistake and put 2 teaspoons of vanilla. If the person who got that recipe said, you know, this tastes even better than the original, soon what would happen is that new recipe would be the one that would be out there, which would be 2 teaspoons of vanilla rather than 1. Now, if it said 1 million teaspoons of vanilla, then that wouldn't be good and that would die off. But the one that was slightly better would survive. And we think what happened here is a mutation that made the spike protein in the virus connect more strongly to the receptor, which is the ACE2 receptor, is what caused this. And because it binds more rapidly and more strongly, it has now become the dominant virus in some places in England. We do expect it to spread. Things that spread quicker, we do expect to become more common. And the thought is that by the end of this spring, this could be the dominant variant in the U.S. That'll be hard, because if it spreads 50% more than this virus, that's going to be really problematic, because it'll mean higher numbers of people need to be vaccinated, and it'll mean when we have an outbreak of 60 with the old virus, the same event may cause an outbreak of 90 in this new group, just making much more work.
So for responding to that, the variant, is it... what am I trying to say here? Is it, how is it going to respond to the vaccine differently?
We do not think that these variants cause a different response to the vaccine. So we think the vaccine will still work against all of the variants that are out there. Again, the vaccine works on just a very specific part of the genome, which is the middle part of the spike protein. And we don't think that has changed. However, anytime there are mutations, there could be a mutation in the part that this vaccine responds to, and that would really be devastating.
What are some other new things that you've learned, or the medical community has learned, about the virus recently?
Well, a couple of things. One is that among older people, the symptoms they may have are not the typical fever and cough. They can just have a not wanting to eat, bad diarrhea, or psychosis, so where they're not thinking clearly. And so we're asking that seniors with those symptoms be tested for COVID. The other thing that we've been seeing is on the long haulers, both some good news and bad news. The bad news is that long hauler syndrome seems to be real and seems to affect lots of people. So that is, people who've had COVID don't feel back to normal for many weeks or months. But the good news is that many of the people who lost their sense of smell or taste for 5 or 6 months are getting it back. Many of the people who had poor exercise tolerance in the 5 or 6 months after are now starting to get that back. So we are pleased to see that some of these things will not be lifelong.
What about the potential, though, for lung damage? I've seen some pictures that seem a bit grim.
They are grim. So the lung function does seem to improve with time, although some of the pictures are really grim, and some of the recovery of lung function seems to be not complete.
All right, County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhoff for our weekly in-depth look at COVID-19. Dr. Bob, thanks for being on this afternoon.
Well, thank you for having me.
1258 at News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.